I've had it up to here, listening to a small segment of people trying to put down America. America's the greatest land on earth, and we ought to be proud of what we have. I'm proud of America, I'm proud of our people, and I'm going to prove it. We're American, and damn proud of it.
Frankly, I'm getting a little ticked off.
Go to hell.
Mosher Media Studios, upload to the internet, downloaded to your hearts. It's episode number 2, A New Hope, of the Warpath Podcast. I'm Anthony LaGuardia, joined by Nick Pietrovoy and Adam Gokowski.
What's happening?
How's it going, guys?
Pretty good. Getting really pumped up now. Spring training is starting this Friday, first game, and I'm very pumped. 3:05 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Oh, it is on. It is on. It is just, it's the time of year that everybody loves. Adam, how are you feeling about it?
I'm feeling great. And, you know, I just want to get started. I'm just, you know, tired of the cold. I'm just tired of this weather. I'm just ready for some baseball.
Oh, after spending 45 minutes on 77 North between Brecksville and Rockside Road.
That's brutal.
I'm over this too myself. It's just time for baseball. And here we are to talk about it with you. Indians baseball, it's getting geared up, but it's been 3 weeks since our last podcast. If you can remember, we closed the show last time with the beer of the podcast, but this time we're going to open it with the beer of the podcast. And this episode, it is none other than my good friend Zach Bastin, the brewmaster at Hoppin' Frog Brewery, his favorite beer out of kilter, Wee Heavy Scotch Red Ale. I'm going to go ahead and crack it. Hopefully you guys can pick that up. And I can't get it open, son of a gun. All right.
There we go.
This is a rich, malty flavor of caramelized and toasted grains that dominate the strong Scotch ale. And it is fantastic. Thank you, Zach, for hooking us up with this. And just to let everybody know that Hoppin' Frog is celebrating the introduction of their newest beer coming up this Friday, the Caminator Imperial Doppelbock. It's going to be on a lunch truck this Friday. Let's see, at 10 a.m. until 5 p.m. Just stop in at Hoppin' Frogs and get your beer. Hoppin' Frogs is in Akron at 1680 F. East Waterloo Road in Akron, Ohio, 44306. Their number there is 330-352-4578. And let me tell you.
He's drinking right now.
It's good.
It feels so good once it touches the lips.
So good. So
that's going to be right in time for the first ball game.
Right in time for the first ball game. So pick it up before the ball game. Hoppin' Frogs is a great local brewery. We're ranked 13th. In a national poll recently of top breweries in the nation. So
wow.
They are doing fantastic stuff down in Akron. But let's get back to baseball here. So it's been 3 weeks since our last podcast. And a lot of things have gone on since
then.
Very
eventful 3 weeks.
Yes, we've had some new signings with the Indians. But in our lives, things have been going on. The other day, I was talking to Nick on the phone, and Jacob did caca in the toilet again.
Yeah, he did. Actually, Anthony was he gave me a call, and I opened the door, walked in, and Jacob come running up and said, "Daddy made a big caca." And he was explaining to me that, you know, he had actually used the toilet, number two, and Anthony got to hear the whole thing on the other end. So,
fantastic, fantastic. Reminds me of my 16th birthday. So, but, you know, beyond that, we had a pitch to the Cleveland Indians about the podcast, which went very well. We've been doing some editing. We've been having Facebook, Twitter, and some other updates for the listeners, and thank you guys for the information that we've been getting from you. Thank you for the 104 podcast downloads in 2.5 days. Quite impressive, guys. Tell me, you know, what was going through your mind as you watched that number jump up.
I just keep going back and double checking the ticker. I mean, it's exciting. It's just like watching a YouTube video, checking the views, seeing how many as it's going up. And that's how I'm feeling when I go to the pod. Well, it's Podomatic.
Podomatic.
Our feed that our podcast is going through. But yeah, I get excited every time I see it go up, man.
Yeah, it's excellent.
Well, I was going to say, it was like the Anthony Longoria election over here where the numbers were just flying in and results around midnight. So, you know, I'd be going to bed every night seeing the numbers. Or you could say it was like the stock market. You just hope it doesn't crash anytime soon. But, you know, it was a great feel, you know, get the text saying we're at this level or we have this many viewers. And then the Twitter, you know, I was getting, you know, notifications, which that never happens with me. So, you know, you know, something's good is going on.
I went from 2 Twitter followers up to 11, which is outstanding. Now, Warpath Podcast has well over 30 followers, but myself, Joe at Joe Fabeats, I had 2 before the podcast started, and those were Nick and Adam. And it was awesome to just see some people joining up. And
no, we weren't even following you. Remember, you sent us a direct mention, and you're like, "Hey, why don't you guys follow a fellow co-host?"
That's
and
right.
I said, "Oh, okay, sorry about that, buddy."
That is true. That's very true. But it was just awesome to have that happen. And you know, we've since seen some people retweeting about the show, and the names, which we'll talk about in a few minutes, are just outstanding. We really are excited to have those people, you know, watching us and liking us. But it all starts with the pitch to the Indians. Let me tell you, it was quite the experience.
Oh, man, this was huge.
Poor Nick. You know, we took a couple people from the Indians to lunch and threw it at them. You know, what do you guys think about this? How do you feel about doing this? In the end, it turned out great because, hey, we're doing episode number 2 right now.
We're here right now.
But, Nick, I'll just let you go ahead because I think there was at one point Nick set his pizza down and grabbed his knife and was going to stab me in the eye.
Well, you know, I was just explaining this story earlier, and Anthony is the sales guy. He's the one with the million-dollar pitch. So I was excited to kind of get to see him firsthand what this guy could do. You know, I've worked with him for several years, and I know how he gets things done, but I never had gone out on a sales pitch with him. So we sit down with Curtis Danberg, the communications director at the Cleveland Indians, and we have a good relationship with him. We worked with him for many years. And so, you know, there was nothing really to be nervous about. We knew him. We sat down with Ashley Churchill, creative coordinator. So
who we're with daily.
Yeah, we work with her daily. So, you know, nobody to be too embarrassed to pitch the idea to. And so we sit down to lunch at Vincenzo's Pizza downtown. A little plug in there. It's a great place.
So good.
One of Curtis's favorites. And Anthony is sitting across the table from me, and we're just, you know, eating our pizza, doing some small talk. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, when's he going to bring it up? Is he ever going to say anything about it? You know, we're halfway through our food. And finally, I kind of said, all right, man, let's get this rolling. The whole reason we're here. And Curtis said, yeah, let's hear the pitch. So he starts out, and he, you know, later I found out that he had a migraine. He had some bad news before the meeting, so he was just not his normal jovial self.
Anyway, it was brutal. I honestly was looking at the pizza and I just wanted to just choke on it. I was choking.
Yeah, it was a little bit of a choke. I was very worried. But you could tell that they were receptive to the idea. Anthony started off and, you know, he started bumbling around saying, well, you know, Nick and I have worked together for many years and we just really are big, huge baseball fans. And, you know, basically like things that the Indians didn't care or that
they already
knew.
Know.
For about 5 minutes. And they're looking back and forth at each other. Like, is he going to ever get to any, like,
are these two getting married? Is that what they're trying to tell me right now?
What are they explaining to us? It's not rocket science. And I'm just, dying inside. Like,
and
come
I
on, man.
Saw
just
this
go
look
for
in
it.
Nick's eye.
Go for the sale.
And I turned it all around. I started talking about the dream, which got a good laugh out of everybody. And Curtis, there's your plug for the weird thing that I do every week.
Yep.
I talked about the dream of having the podcast, which we mentioned on the last podcast.
I had a dream.
Yeah, I won't go back into that one because my mother just ripped me for that one. But that's all right. She gave me a nice email that I'll read in a little bit anyways. But
Anthony closed the deal.
And then Nick ran me out of there. He actually grabbed my hand and pulled me out. It was
Well, once you sell, you got to go.
That's exactly what I said.
Once you make the deal,
they said, you know, we're very impressed that you guys are spending your free time, you know, promoting the team. And we're excited for it. And we want you to move forward with it. We think it's totally fine. You know, they're excited for us. Yeah. And Anthony is like, yeah, well, and he started going into something else. I'm like, dude, that's it. Let's close the sale.
I was ready to sell everything then. It was once I got the yes, it was on. I was like, ooh, I got about 10 other ideas.
Yeah, don't say anything else until we might lose it. So let's just go and just get out of here.
But we've got it. And let me tell you guys, it's great because they really are 100% behind us and 100% behind the fans having a voice. Having, you know, somewhere to talk about baseball, talk about the Indians. They want to know what you have to say. So please remember just to send us your questions, your remarks, everything. For people who have been down on ownership, down on management, let me tell you, there is a new feeling around that place. And I'm not sure if it was Francona or what that made it happen. But they were so, I don't want to say they were in love with the idea, but I mean, I got an email at 10:30 last night that I sent to the other guys with, hey, don't forget to mention this from them. You know, so this is your podcast. This is your voice to the Indians, and they love that. They love it. So even though I embarrassed the hell out of Nick, I'm glad I did it because, you know, we now have this media to go to.
Game over. He did a good job.
Yes, yes.
Pulled it out.
But, you know, they also mentioned that you'll be seeing it coming out here. Don't forget to sign up for the Cleveland Indians Twitter feed. They're going to be tweeting out about Warpath Podcast. So that's going to be going out to 90,000 people soon. But just yesterday, Nick hooked us up with the Warpath Podcast Twitter account. Paul Hoynes tweeted it to 20,000 people.
That's awesome.
That's right. I was very excited that Hoynesy gave us a shout out. Big props to him. I read his column all the time in the PD about the tribe, and I've read him for years. I actually went in chat rooms, you know, years ago, just sitting in there talking tribe baseball with him as my handle was Felix Vermeen, and he got a kick out of that back in the day. So thank you very much to Paul Hoynes.
Yes, yeah. So yeah, you know, we just went up to 40 followers on Twitter. Unbelievable. That, but today Nick hooked us up with another tweet from somebody.
That's right. None other than the new Indians Hall of Famer, Carlos Baerga.
Carlos,
in the actual
awesome.
Team Hall of Fame, not Cooperstown, but still, in our hearts, he's in Cooperstown.
People's champ. That's what he is.
He's the people's champ.
Yeah. He's the people's champ by land. By sea, in Baerga.
Exactly right.
So, you know, we had Carlos Baerga retweet us. There was actually quite a few different people that retweeted, and a lot of those were our followers, so we really appreciate it. We want to get it out there. You know, before we start talking baseball, just Nick had something to kind of go along with Josh Tomlin's hunting trip last podcast.
Well, yeah, after we talked about Tomlin – going on the kill, what was it, a few weeks ago, we went down to Columbus that weekend to visit. I have some family that lives down there, my wife's family. And my wife's sister's fiance, excuse me, he's a huge hunter. And so we went out to his cabin, you know, had a good manly weekend while the women went and they were shopping for bridesmaids' dresses. Or no, they were actually shopping for the bride's wedding dress. We decided to go take a little trip out to the cabin, into the woods, into the wilderness. Shoot some guns.
I don't think anyone's blaming you on that one.
Yeah, exactly.
There's not one person. What do you mean? You didn't go out shopping for dresses?
I think you might get a few more followers just for not going dress shopping.
Yeah, thank God we didn't have to go. Love you, honey. But it was a lot of fun. We shot guns, shot bows, went hiking, climbing in some caves. But anyways, while we're down there, this is in southeast Ohio, near Hocking Hills, we go to this ammo shop, this little family-owned ammo shop. And we're sitting in there looking at shotguns. Mark, who is my sister-in-law's fiance, he was looking at some different shotguns to buy. And this old man comes up to us. And you could tell he was just kind of patrolling around trying to get somebody to talk to. And he said, "You boys better buy them up before I can anymore." And we're like, "Yeah, yeah, you know, we've heard about all the different gun control and stuff like that." So that's how he eased into the conversation. And he came up, he started walking around and kind of doing his own thing for a while. He came back up to us. He said, "I think I've got something in the car, a picture in the car that you boys would like to see."
And mind you, this is an ammo shop, so God only knows where this is going to go.
Ammo shop in southeastern Ohio, out in the boonies. And this guy was a character, man. He came up to us and he said, "I caught one on my trail camera, about 6 or 7 foot. I swear I did." And we were like, "No way. You caught a picture of a huge deer? Maybe a bear?" And he said, "I'll go get the picture and show you." He went outside and we're looking at each other like, "What the hell is this guy talking about? What has he got?" He comes back in while they're checking out and he comes up to me and he's like, "Here it is." He shows us a picture. He was like building some kind of shed. So there's plywood up sitting on its side. And peeking around the corner is a huge alien. I shit you not. And I'm looking at this dude. I'm a graphic designer, so I know Photoshop when I see it. This guy has no Photoshop skills. He blew up a little trail camera photo. You know, 8x10, and yeah, obviously he didn't do anything with the computer to enhance the image, and we're looking at it like, "What?
That's amazing! How do you do that?"
Yeah, and he said, "See, I told you," and he told us a story about this other guy. He said, "Yeah, I've been showing this picture all around town. People don't believe me." And I'm like, "Well, I mean, this is kind of a freaky photo, you know? Nobody wants to believe this is real." And he's like, "I went to this other hardware store, and the guy behind the counter said, 'Oh, Phil over there, he claims he's been abducted when he was younger. Nobody believes him.'" And so the old man...
"Abducted by some hillbillies."
So the old man says, "I think I'd like to talk to him." And the guy was like, "Well, he doesn't like to talk about it anymore." So anyways, he shuffled his way over there, and he showed him the photo. And I swear to God, he said, the guy took one look at the photo, and he looked up at both the guy behind the counter and the old man, and he said, "Yep, they're back."
Oh, Lord.
He turned and walked away. And that's it. That's all he wanted to say about it.
This is not happening in my wife's part of Columbus. That's all I know.
So, I mean, if it happens anywhere, it's southeast Ohio. It explains a lot of the good nights I went to visit OU. You know, it's just weird things left and right. And it kind of makes sense now.
Exactly. It has nothing to do with baseball, but, I knew our listeners and you guys would appreciate this story.
That is fantastic.
Oh, good Lord. Good Lord.
I can't believe you've been holding on to that one from me since you've been down
there. It was so good. I couldn't wait to explain it, but I had to do it on the air.
Oh, man, that is fantastic. So Adam, what do you had going on here?
I've always had an old saying, the three things in a man's life that they love that will kill them: babes, booze, and baseball. And thank God for the Indians right now, because, you know, I've been chasing somebody for 10 years, and I realized, you know, the chase is over. The chase is over, you know. God bless her, you know, but I have to move on. But, you know, the other night, I went to go buy a bottle of, you know, adult beverage, and the guy behind the counter actually was like, you know, things are going to get better, man. I'm like, they will, but at least I have the Indians right now. So, you know, that's the positive light right now. It's Cleveland Indians baseball.
You can't get any better than that, buddy.
No.
It's always going to bring the sunshine out when you're talking trap.
The women, they come, they go.
Oh, and, my God.
You know, ladies out there, I'm sorry, but, you know, they come and go just like ships in the night.
Except for our wives.
Except for our wives, and one day it'll be there for you. Actually, I've seen a couple of these ladies on here on the Twitter followers. There's a couple of them that, I don't know, they might be pretty interesting. There's a couple on there. I'm trying to remember who one of them is. She's a huge Indians fan. I've seen, I think, 15 tweets from her today about the Indians.
That's some material for you, yes. Right there, Adam.
What's her age?
She's a nurse. She's a nurse.
78. But
that's good.
Well, so was the one that broke my heart. So we can continue the track.
All right. Well, this one though, she seems pretty spunky. She might be perfect for you. So I'm not going to say the name, but you're a Twitter follower, and you're a nurse who. Oh wait, no, she's a proud Navy wife. You want to stay away from that one. Never mind. That's the
support the troops. Bottom line,
go back.
Support the troops. There you go. So, hey, that's all right.
It happens.
That's all right. I've been on that chase myself, and I was lucky enough to find my wife. And I do want to throw out there right now, just thank you to my wife, and I love you very much, because Valentine's Day, I spent, I think it was about 3 hours editing the episode number one down into chapters. Our sound man, Joe Fortunato, who is in the other room. Joe, thank you very much for what you did. You did an awesome job with episode number one.
He's a rock star in the studio and in real life.
Joe's band is Venom and Jones. Check them out, out there in the iTunes world and the music world. Great band. We're going to hopefully be having one of his songs as our intro here soon. But Joe did an awesome job editing the actual podcast, but I took it and I broke it down into chapters, and thank God for Joe, because if I would have had to do the whole thing, we probably still wouldn't have it out. It took me 3 hours to make it into 4 chapters without a mouse. It was a very bad idea.
Like rowing in a boat without a paddle.
But when I went into bed, my wife just looked at me like, really? Really? And then, of course, 5 minutes later, my son woke up and I had to take care of him, so it was brutal. Venom and James, not Venom and Joe. It's Venom and James. Joe just walked in and handed me a piece of paper with the greatest look on his face.
Get it right or pay the price.
I will pay the price. He's going to hit me over the head with the guitar later. So, or that he's going to make my voice synthesized into something else.
He realized he couldn't edit that to sound like James.
But just, you know, getting on with it here before we start talking about baseball, I did want to bring up one email that I got. And if you guys got anything from the last podcast that you saw out there on Twitter or Facebook that you want to mention, mine was a email that I got from my mom that says, I can't believe how good you guys did. You actually sounded knowledgeable about something. Love, Mom. Thanks, Mom.
That's beautiful. Thank you so much, Anthony's mom.
36 years, I finally impressed my mom. It knew it was going to come someday.
Warpath Podcast is doing big things.
It's changing lives.
Well, yeah, we just got one actually right before the show started. One of our followers, Go Tribe 028, obviously a big Indians fan, and he's also a Breaking Bad fan because his Twitter avatar is a picture of Walt, which I'm a huge fan of that show.
Awesome show.
Shout out to GoTribe 028. And he said, enjoyed your first episode a lot. Looking to be a weekly show or bi-weekly? And right now, I think in spring training, we're hoping to do it minimum monthly, but I think a bi-weekly. Awesome. And during the season, Hopefully carry that on bi-weekly, maybe weekly. We'll see how it all picks up. But yeah, that's the answer to your question.
And it's all up to our good friend Dan Mosier. Dan has been awesome to us and for us with letting us use the studio here, setting it up here at Mosier Media Studios here in Independence, Ohio. For all your video needs, check out Dan Mosier and Mosier Media. They do a wonderful job. Just want to keep pimping him out here. So, Adam, anything you saw out there that you wanted to? I saw a nice email or Facebook post from your mom on there, but
yeah, I guess we're just impressing moms all over.
Yeah, it's a MILF station here.
I don't know. Wait, my mom's know, even a fan of us on Facebook.
I saw your sister on there.
All right, well,
I wasn't checking. Her
you saw a sister on the internet?
I saw it. I did.
Wait
see
a minute.
Sister on the internet.
I don't like the sound of that.
Another thing that he's kept secret from me. From years,
exactly. There's a reason.
End of discussion.
You don't mess with an Italian man's sister.
Is her name Angela?
No.
Oh, then.
but moving along.
I'm not even going to tell you her name. That's keep a low profile. No, Lisa's her name.
You can find it on the Warpath Podcast Facebook page.
Don't be digging too deep, guys.
No, that's creepers. That's creepers. All right, so now we're going to move on to the recent signings that the Indians have had so far. And in the couple weeks since we've been on the podcast, there's just been a huge signing that when we sat down and we did the pitch to the Indians, Curtis Danberg said it even blew him out of the water that they didn't even know in his department that this was coming.
So they went for shock and awe, Tribe did this year, and that was the first time that had ever happened since he's been there.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, who would have thought that we could have brought something out like this?
You know, I posted on my Facebook a few days ago, because obviously we're talking about the man himself, Michael Bourne.
Exactly.
And I thought it was a great way to bring it in because he is getting compared a lot to Kenny Lofton, yep, who is also compared to Major League's very own Willie Mays Hayes, exactly, the 1989 baseball flick. So the first thing I posted was, I think this is how Michael Bourne showed up to spring training. And it's a scene where Willie Mays Hayes is sleeping outside of spring training and pops out of bed and immediately just books it through the racing line. We're like, get this man a jersey.
Isn't he running in his pajamas or something?
Yeah, he's running in his blue pajamas.
Bare feet. And
barefoot, blue pajamas. So that is, you know, mentally what I want to think, what actually happened. But, you know, the signing itself, you know, let's talk about that.
Yeah, that was amazing. It was kind of funny because it came right after, well, it was right after we signed Giambi and Daisuke. And on Facebook, you know, I try to start posting on Facebook and trying to start some discussions about Giambi and Daisuke. And Giambi, man, I was just getting slammed on Facebook for that one. Then Daisuke came in and, you know, there was, you know, it was 40-60, 40 against 6, I'm sorry, 44-60 against. But the firestorm on Facebook, on Twitter, when Michael Bourne signed with the Indians was just incredible.
It's just all positive right now. Everybody was pumped about Swisher. And then, you know, we made the trade to get... Actually, did we do the trade first with Chu to get Bauer?
Yes. No, well, it went from trade with Chu to sign Swisher.
Swisher, right. Okay.
And that was before Christmas.
Right.
And then a few months later, here we
it was
are.
It was a Swishmas because a of Swishmas, that signing. Yes. And then, you know, we got Giambi. Everybody's complaining. Even Vincenza at Vincenza's Pizza. That's the first thing she says. Curtis is all excited. He's like, hey, what do you think? Because she's a big Tribes fan. And she looks at him and says, what are we going to do with Giambi? What's he going to roll a wheelchair to first base?
I just find the most ironic part being is with, have you guys ever seen Moneyball, the movie?
Oh, yeah.
How it's very... It's basically a front office battle between the Indians and the Oakland A's throughout the whole movie. And how ironic that the ties with Johnny Damon and Jason Giambi leaving the A's.
Yeah.
And then the front office debate versus Indians. And in reality, 10 years later, we have Johnny Damon. And then the year after that, Jason Giambi. So both
that
those
is
guys
kinda weird.
Eventually do show up with yeah. Mark Shapiro, who is very publicized in that movie as well.
Yeah, yeah. Definitely.
It's...
Giambi, I, you know, we were getting tweets from CO Beast 8, my buddy Anton out in Colorado. A little shout out to him. And he's complaining because we were talking about, you know, signing Tomy in our last podcast. Complaining that, you know, why are you guys always trying to look back in the past? And then, we're kind of excited a little bit about getting Giambi. Not necessarily that he's going to make the roster. I don't even know if he's going to make the roster. He might not. You never know what's going to happen. But his veteran leadership is something that I think is an asset to our team. And Anthony's done a little research on this. Didn't you read a story about how he was a pretty good influence in the clubhouse?
Oh, he's a great influence in Oakland and in New York. I mean, you've got a guy like Giambi, and then you've got a guy like Swisher. Now, even if Giambi doesn't make the team coming out of spring training, which I don't know that they really believe that he's going to or not, pushing the younger players. But also,
he's almost like a coach.
Because he was going to be a manager. He was second person in line to get the managing job in Colorado for this season.
Oh wow, I didn't realize
that. He was I forget who got the managerial position in Colorado, and it's not a Rockies broadcast, so I don't care. But Giambi was up for it. So you got this guy who's going to almost be like a player manager in the locker room during spring training, working with these younger guys, showing them how to be a winner. Yeah, maybe he juiced it, you know, for a while. But, you know, juice only gets you so far. You've got to have it between the ears to hit the ball, to be a winner. So you've got Giambi, and you've got Swisher. You've got Daisuke coming over from the Red Sox. Bourne has been in, you know, Atlanta, you know, has had some down years, but still been around some awesome guys. You've brought in, and Reynolds went through a pennant race last year. So you've got some guys coming into the club who are going to bring that sense of leadership, that sense of we've been here, this is how you do it. Been here, done that. So, you know, who cares if Giambi doesn't make it? And if he does, it's just all the better.
Yeah.
It's one more voice on top of Francona to talk to these young guys.
It's a win-win situation. If he makes the team, great. You know, that means he beat somebody out.
It's
cost nothing.
A couple nickels.
And if he doesn't make the team, he probably helps on the leadership side.
Yeah.
With the young guys, so
I wouldn't even doubt that you'd see the guy, you know, maybe, you know, be on the staff at some point, you know, I mean, because he has managerial aspirations. Maybe this brings him into the fold at the Indians. I don't see that as a bad thing, but
you never know.
You know, getting back to Bourne, what we're bringing in here, and we, Nick and I were texting about this yesterday about Adam, that I was texting with about talking about Lofton versus Bourne, and you know, what Bourne brings to the team versus what Lofton meant to the team. And, I mean, Bourne right away, you look at it last year, 96 runs batted in, sixth in the NL. Stolen bases, 42, second in the NL. So you've got Bourne and you've got Stubbs right there.
Bourne was number one.
Bourne was number
center
one.
Fielder.
Yeah.
Number one center fielder defensively in the National League. He plays a shallow center.
Yeah.
So I was listening to one of the interviews he did on 92.3 The Fan. And they were comparing him to Lofton because general manager Chris Antonetti actually went out on a limb and said, Bourne is better than Kenny Lofton defensively.
Wow.
That's big.
And he said
that's big words.
In an interview live on the air on the radio. And they were just flabbergasted that he actually went on a limb and said that. Because usually, you know, you got to kind of say, well, I don't want to compare him to, you know, a great that, you know, has been here in the past. He's really good, though. But, no, he said he's better defensively, in his opinion.
Well,
I'm excited. That's okay. I'm excited to see him play his version of center field because he was explaining he plays a shallow center, which my grandfather always taught me about Tris Speaker, who played center for the Indians in the 20s. We talked about him last time. And he played a very shallow center, too. And, you know, they would still get to those balls all the way by the wall. But he said himself, Bourne said he's not going to be high flying over the wall, like my story about Kenny Lofton, which was one of my favorite memories. He's not going to be doing that because he doesn't get to those balls as much, but he does steal a lot of the blooper hits away from those hitters because he plays such a shallow center. So I'm interested to see what happens.
Well, my biggest thing with Michael Bourne is I got to give credit where credit's due. Well, first thing is, you know, everyone is giving Francona credit. Same with me. You know, I think this whole thing has been Francona-esque, where Terry has gone on and said, I had nothing to do with this one, which that really did show Antonetti's stripes. Now down in Goodyear, it's like Dr. Frankenstein working on the monster. You have Kenny Lofton working with Michael Bourne. So it is literally like, you know, just the greatest thing, the greatest combination you can think of. You're going to have somebody teach the game. At least you have the best teaching.
That's going to be a beautiful thing.
But when we signed Michael, I immediately thought, you know, with the comparison to Lofton and himself and then even Michael Brantley, you know, just to go in the history books a little, they would not be able to climb walls if Larry Doby couldn't knock them down. Being, you know, Larry Doby was the first black center fielder in the American League, and all three of those guys were black center fielders. So it's pretty cool that Larry Doby, I know this is off topic a little, but Larry Doby, what he did in 1947 is the reason why Michael Bourne is here in 2013.
That's true, and Larry Doby doesn't get as much credit as Jackie Robinson, but I think he started about 6 or 8 weeks after Jackie Robinson in the AL.
Yeah, something like
when
that.
When he broke the color barrier in the American League. So, I mean, he went through all the same kind of racial problems that Jackie Robinson did just a little bit afterward, and he doesn't get as much respect, but in Cleveland he does, especially on the Warpath podcast. I actually wanted to make, I still do, a custom jersey from, you know, those old 1948 jerseys. One of Larry Doby and one of Bob Feller. Those are my two favorite Indians of all time. Yeah, he's the man.
Yeah, so I think, you know, there's somewhere up there, you know, in the heavens where Larry Doby is just looking down saying, you know, right on. You know, I you know, who knows if he's going to use the exact words of right on. But the point being is, Larry Doby, you know, what he has done, because I was also thinking in the sense of the Jackie Robinson movie coming out soon. So I just got to, and being Black History Month.
There you go.
Give some respect to Larry Doby.
Good tie-in. And they just recently renamed Eagle Avenue, which is the street that goes right behind the bleachers in the ballpark, Larry Doby Way, last year. So, a titan of the tribe. You got to remember him.
I like that. But, you know, and if you're looking at what he's bringing in also, you know, there's been complaints about Bourne that he struck out too many times last year. But he had 70 walks, which was eighth in the NL. You had...
What was his on-base percentage?
His on-base percentage last year...
And NL is a pitcher's league, too.
Yeah, that's true.
That's impressive.
Last year...
Looks like I've got 348 here on the interwebs. It's faster than your paper.
Wow. That's probably faster than my editing, too, so that's all right. But, you know, he 171 hits, 13th in the NL. I mean, we're adding some speed. We're adding some runs. We're adding some power, 10 triples, you know, 34 doubles in 2011. The guy can do just about everything.
This outfield may very well be the best outfield the Indians have ever fielded.
Defensively.
Agree.
I agree.
Oh, you know?
Absolutely. You've got three center fielders roaming the outfield. That was one of my questions that I had was, is anything going to drop in the gaps against this team? Because the speed in the outfield is unbelievable.
That's a good point, because Rick Manning, he was on Spring Training Daily or something yesterday, and he was talking about, well, you know, this is going to help the pitchers out. Ubaldo, which... you know, we're hopeful that he's going to do something. He's a fly ball pitcher. These guys are going to run down all the fly balls. But the ground ball pitchers, even if they're giving up seeing eye singles in the holes and stuff like that, if they go in the gap, these guys are going to cut them off in the gap. But even if they're liners up into the gap, these guys will cut them off, hold them to a single. That's going to really help the pitchers. You know, it's going to be huge to have these three center fielders in the outfield.
Yeah, I mean, you think about what we're going to versus what we came from with Chu in the outfield and the multitude of left fielders that we've had in the outfield over the past couple of years, and then Grady Sizemore with his one leg.
Yeah.
I mean, it's unbelievable.
Yeah. I mean, my whole thing is, you know, as Nick kind of just pointed out, we have two outfielders who are also center fielders. So there are two guys who will not be playing the position that they should be, because right, there is somebody better than them. And that says a lot. You know, and that's no disrespect to Drew Stubbs or Michael Brantley. Michael Brantley.
Yeah.
But truth be told, that's how fast that outfield is.
And I want to give a lot of props to Brantley, because you take a look at what he's gone through this offseason. He started out the offseason as the center fielder for the Cleveland Indians. Then he was moved to left field for the Cleveland Indians.
Well, it was
up in the air. And then now another center fielder is brought in. And he's dropped from being, what, the number one guy in the order to...
Who Who knows where he's going to bat?
Way down in the batting order. But you haven't heard a peep from the guy. He's all on board with it.
Don't be shocked if he plays DH, too. I would not be shocked by that at all.
Oh, yeah.
Because I have a feeling they're gonna transition out of, you know, just have some people rest one day and put whoever's resting in the DH spot. And it might actually work out pretty well in that regard.
Yeah. Yeah, it definitely is going to. So, Bourne just brings a lot of excitement. I loved what, you know, just watching on Facebook all the Bourne identity comments. And
Bourne supremacy.
Bourne
tribe
supremacy.
Is Bourne again.
But tribe is Bourne again. There are so many, you know, it's funny if you think about it. You know, Nick and I think about things from the marketing standpoint for the Indians and promotions. All the promotional things that you can do with this team, from the Bourne identity, Bourne supremacy, to, you know, things with Nick Swisher, things with Vinny P.
I want to do a Bourne to Run, because I'm a huge Bruce Springsteen fan. So maybe they could do a Boss concert. Michael Bourne is just running behind the stage the whole time.
I like
That's
that.
All we need.
I like that.
We did a concert there before. Brad Paisley, come on.
Brad Paisley, it was
you get
funny.
The Boss.
And Jimmy Buffett.
Jimmy Buffett. That was a long time ago, but it was funny. I was talking to the Big Deal about concerts. And the Big Deal told me that there's no way they'll ever do another concert again because of the damage. They did more damage to the field with the Brad Paisley concert than they did with Snow Days 2 years in a row.
That's rough.
It was pretty bad, but it was fun. It gave me a chance to wear my cowboy hat.
It was a lot of fun.
I looked pretty hot in that cowboy hat, let me tell you. So, you know, we were talking about Jason Giambi also, and we'll just kind of move on from there. You know, here's the question, though, is do we really think he has a chance to make the team? We talked about it a little
Giambi,
bit. But
I don't know.
You know what? It's kind of one of those things, like, you know, and I always compare it to, like, in beginning of 2012, so a year ago, when they didn't sign Tomy, I'm like, well, yeah, it kind of sucks that this, you know, ideal, when I put with quotations in my hand, this, you know, power hitter that I once grew up with, if we don't have a spot for a 43-year-old, then we're doing something well.
Yes.
Bottom line. Like, that's how I see it.
It's good.
It's like when Jamie Moyer pitched for Colorado. It's like, if you have a spot for a 40-plus-year-old who's way out of his prime, then something good is going on. Unless their name's Julio Franco. Well, but my point being is, if you have some kid who, you know, just came out of the, you know, Dominican Republic and he's 20, of course, you know, I would take the kid over the, you know, sometimes you just got to put the cleats in the
back
closet.
Of the locker.
Yeah.
I'd like to sign that guy, Joe Fabiz. I heard he's a pretty hot prospect down at AAA.
He's been getting a lot of pub down at AAA. It's unbelievable how he's just blowing up.
Trevisano was talking about something yesterday, and he mentioned Joe Fabiz. And I thought he was talking about your Twitter handle. I thought you said something to the Triv Show or something. And no, he was just using it as a slang term, like you.
Like
you,
I use
family,
the
slang
term, yeah. That would be, we got to figure out how we can get Trib to say that. That'd
what about
be,
Dice K? Do we even want to talk about Dice
K? Yeah, we
K?
Want to talk about Dice K, because now, you know, we were talking last episode about the pitchers that we brought in. You know, we've got...
I really like Kazmir.
Kazmir.
I got my
we've
eye
got,
on him.
Bauer, who's coming in. We got Meyer, who's coming in.
Carlos Carrasco is going to have
Carlos
Carrasco,
coming back.
He's going to be in the rotation. Yeah. When he was in, what was it, a few years ago, before his surgery?
Yeah, two
his
years
problems,
ago he was in there, and
he was the number two starter.
Yeah, and I heard that down in, fall ball, I think it was, that I heard he was pitching in the low 90s. He was looking good. And when when I saw him at Tribe Fest, and, he looked like he was in shape, so he's rearing ready to go. But we've got this multitude of pitchers now. And
he must work out.
What's that?
He must work out.
He must work
out. Well, he's a professional, I would hope so.
He looked like he was in shape.
He caught Anthony's eye.
He did catch my eye. It was romantic. There was a moment. But it was weird because my nephew and my son were right there too, and my wife. But
and Dreamweaver's just playing in the background. Just like Wayne's World.
Actually, no, it was Foxy Lady. But yeah,
wow.
That's all right. That's all right.
He really had some thought into this one.
I did. But, you know, back to Dice K. You know, we've got all these pitchers that we're bringing in that we bring in Dice K. Do we think that the fact – does he have anything left is the question.
Well, how much opportunity has he been given, you know? And The thing is, we got him once again for not too much. I mean, the most he can make is, what, $4 million? Which is not, in reality, it's not too crazy, you know, because you can turn out, I mean, you know, who knows, maybe he can win 16 games, maybe he can win 17, or maybe he, you know, doesn't pan out at all. You don't know with a guy like that. And, you know, I see that we're going to talk about, will Francona help? That's a question mark, you know? Like, as much as I want to say Francona is a miracle, which I, you know, will say that every day, but you just never know. You know, it might pan out. So if it does, that's awesome for us. And if it doesn't, you know, same thing with Giambi. It's only so much chump change that we lose.
We'll see about Dice K. You know, looking at his stats, I'm just checking him out right here. He only really had one really good year.
In the majors. Yeah.
Yeah. At the rest of the time, you know, his ERA is at 8.28, 5.3, 4.69, 5.76. He had one year, he was 2.9. And he had 18 wins that year, 18-3. So, you know, I don't have too much hope for him. But at the same time, I was reading just something earlier. And the Indians are not sure what they're going to get out of him. They had Chris Antonetti, Terry Francona, the pitching coach, and I can't remember if Shapiro was even out there in Goodyear watching his first bullpen session. So they're all intrigued by what Dice K has left in the tank. And there's been some reports that he's back in good shape. You know, he must work out as well. And he's healthy. So, you know, he's got that weird windup. Maybe it'll fool a couple people here and there, and he can give us something.
Yeah. It's an interesting sign. I know it was one. You know, Giambi I didn't expect, but I knew what they were looking to do. With Dice K, I really have no idea what the reasoning was, but do you think there's a chance that he could be a long reliever?
Yeah, I was just going to say that. Maybe long relief.
You know, I mean, here's a guy that he spent his career as a starter, you know, over in Japan and now over here in the U.S., and maybe he's that guy that moves to the bullpen, some long relief. You know, we know that he can go six innings if, you know, God forbid, Ubaldo Jimenez blows up in the first or second inning.
Possibility.
Which is a big possibility. So maybe that's one way that he goes. Be interesting to watch because there's been life in that arm. Yeah. And it was amazing how it just died as soon as he got here. It seemed like he had one or two good seasons and then it just died.
That happens with a lot of the players that come from overseas. You know, it's just Yu Darvish, you know, that could be the same thing. He might be decent this year and we'll talk 2 years from now. We'll see where he's at. You know, it's just, in reality, it's a different game.
Yeah, like even Hideki Matsui.
Hideki Matsui, yeah.
He was pretty good for a couple years, then all of a sudden he kind of fell off. Ichiro's the one guy that I will give props to. That guy, he just kills the tribe. And he hates Cleveland, too.
Does he really?
He had some comments where he hates Cleveland. He hates coming here. He's like, the city sucks and everything. The weather's terrible. He commented one time after a series here.
It's funny that he says it about the weather when he lived in how many years in Seattle?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. It's, you know, it's rainy all the time.
Well, that's great. Right. We hate you, Ichiro. Godzilla, come to your city.
We're calling you out. We're calling you out.
Calling you out. So, you know, it's going to be an interesting year with those signings. Tom, I apologize. We were hoping to have him in here with some of his memories about spring training. We're going to bring him in here and talk about those things. But, you know, some of the stories you guys have seen going on about spring training.
Okay, yeah, I'll go first. The one thing I will say about spring training, I've been saying this for years, the one demographic that profits the most out of this is old ladies in Arizona and Florida because their husbands are all at the ballpark for 1 month straight. They don't have to hear about, you know, where's my belt, you know, or like, you know, why doesn't your son call anymore? You know, just stuff like that. So, you know,
that's more like the old ladies probably saying that one.
Oh no. Well, I mean, you know, it's one of those things that these old guys, you know, that's what spring training truly is. And, you know, besides the weather, it's exactly what it is. You know, one day I want to be 250 pounds, 75 years old, gray, and watching Cleveland Indians baseball.
That is a beautiful retirement right there.
As a guy who's halfway to 75, and, you know, if this melt sandwich that I have has any effect later on after the podcast that I'm going to be eating,
We'll be close to 250. I would say it's probably one of my life dreams too, is, you know, to be sitting around in Arizona or Florida going to baseball games. But here's a question to the belt: are they looking for the belt to put their pants on, or to beat their wives? The way
it sounded? I hope it's for the pants.
No, I was meaning for the pants, because, you know, and I'm sorry to any of the female viewers if it came out that way, but no, I was talking about, like, you know, the old guys who, I can't find my pants. It's like, hey, did you check the drawer, honey? Yeah, I found it. You know, like,
hey, wait a minute. That's exact. Did you just take that soundbite from my household?
No.
Because I'm only 30 years old, but I do the same exact thing.
And, you know, you have, like, probably our mothers right now and, you know, your wives and whoever are going, mm-hmm. Yeah, I know that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a universal guy thing. So, like, it's going to be one of those things where these nice gray hair, like the Golden Girls right now, are profiting on spring training because they don't have to put up with their husbands.
No, but, you know, they're not profiting. They're spending cash, I guarantee.
Ask them. Ask them if they're profiting.
They're
they'll say yes.
Yeah, they're profiting, but the guy's pissed.
While their husbands
they're out shopping, buying Vera Bradley bags and all kinds of crap.
Well,
but the guys are spending
true.
Cash at the ballpark too, so what are you going to do?
Yeah, beer and hot dogs, and, you know, it's good times. But the thing is, if you watch spring training with these old guys, you know, you could just see it in their eyes, because none of them, it looks like they're all motionless. And you can tell, because they're, you know, arms crossed. And
there
just,
goes our senior citizen demographic.
Just, well, no, but...
Just killed it.
But what I'm trying to
literally.
Say is, these guys are, they're staring at these young guys, and you can just tell they're comparing them to the past. So it's kind of, you know, it's like they're studying these players. And, you know, away from them just, you know, being extremely like, well, I remember when, you know, you get... Well, if my grandfathers are still around, God bless them both, you know, both of them Tribe fans, you know, if they were in spring training today, they would be looking at Masterson saying, you know, he's no Sam McDowell.
Yeah.
You know, or he's no Feller. And, you know, and my father, you know, who's not quite up there in that age, he would be staring at him being like, he is no Hershiser.
You do it better if you do the impression.
Well, he's no Hershiser. but my point being is, you know, that's... The demographics, if you're going to get anybody to watch you in March, it'd be great to have a fan, all the fans in there being the most critical people you can in baseball.
Oh, absolutely. And your point is actually well taken, because it's funny. I was talking to an elder customer of mine who we were talking about the signings and the trades that have been going on, and he absolutely – hated what we did this past offseason.
Come on.
I couldn't believe it. I'm sitting there, I'm like, you know, well, I think the thought is, you know, listen, we got on base last season, but we couldn't move the runners into scoring position. We couldn't score. So now they're saying, hey, listen, who cares, you know, how many times we get on base? Let's get on base and let's score. And let's hit the ball out of the ballpark.
Let's play good defense.
Exactly. Let's play good defense. Hey, Dan, how you doing? Once again, we're going to just pimp Mosier Media Studios here in Independence, Ohio. Yeah. Dan just popped in to grab his coat out of the studio. But he popped back in again. But to go back to that is, you know, he was upset that we were giving up the batting averages for power. And I think that's a big story this offseason and coming into spring training is the hitting, because now we have guys that are going to go for the long ball. Maybe the batting averages will be 250 to 275. Stubbs might be, you know, around 220, but
I don't like 220.
Well, I don't like 220. You know, anything below the Mendoza line, does anybody remember what the Mendoza line is?
I think it's 200? Like electoral votes. It changes every year.
It changes. Yeah. You know, but
hopefully it's not the Stubbs line by the end of
hopefully it's not the Stubbs line. But hell, if the guy scores 95 to 100 runs,
we'll take it.
We'll take it. If he steals 40 bases, we'll take it.
See, I think the biggest difference is with us and the man you're talking about is the era of baseball. You know, now we're all concentrating on the sabermetrics, on the money ball system of what can we get for this price. And then, but with him, he saw a generation where these pitchers, you know, would start off, and God forbid they're in extra innings, so are they.
Yeah.
So, you know, he's seeing, you know, legendary baseball players, and now we're seeing, you know, I don't want to say, you know, guys who won't be capable of doing it, but they're not expected to.
Right.
Where those guys back in, you know, the 60s, you know, nobody was going to tell them.
Yeah, now there's specialists and everything instead of you know, somebody who's a jack of all trades. Now there's a middle reliever or a bullpen guy who pitches one inning instead of, or even a closer. There wasn't really too much closing going on back then. It was the guy was going nine innings, no matter what.
Well, when did the closer rule come out? Wasn't it somewhere in the 70s?
Yeah, I think it was in the 70s where it became
the save
a
became
bit
an official statistic and everything.
Yeah. Yeah, it was Catfish Hunter was or Eckersley.
Okay, was he one of the originals?
One of those
guys.
He was
in the 80s.
Yeah, he was in the 80s, but I think that's when it started getting big was when those guys started.
When closers became cool.
Started becoming dominant. But, you know, that was an interesting discussion that we had, and it's funny. It was great because, you know, I've sold to this guy for 4 years now, and we talk, but we always talk business. It was the first time that we talked baseball and listened to his perspective on it.
Did you tell him to listen to the Warpath podcast?
I did, and he says, "What's a podcast?" So it was
what's
kind
the
of
internet?
Yeah. It was.
Where's my belt?
You know, so it was an interesting perspective on, you know, the ERAs and the batting averages of the past versus now. And I'm more excited for this. I mean, the thing that was exciting about the 90s was when McGuire and Sosa had the home run contest to see who could hit the most home runs. It was seeing Tommy hit the long ball. It was seeing Lofton run the bases, those types of things. It wasn't watching a guy bat, you know, 320 and only drive in 60 RBI. It does nothing for you.
I think what they're trying to do now, you know, especially the steroid era being – well, the steroid era was obviously a very personal thing. You can't name teams on steroids, but you can name players on steroids. Well, I think since that era ended, they're looking at it more like teamwork game. You know, like this guy will benefit that guy instead of like this guy will just deck 600 home runs in a matter of his career. You're not looking at it this way.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, other stories coming out along with the signings that we've had are...
The one thing I want to talk about for spring training is the infectious enthusiasm that Nick Swisher has on the team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's a lot of the stuff I've been reading about spring training has been about Nick Swisher and how he's changed the whole outlook of the clubhouse. Everybody's excited to play. Everybody's, I'm really excited, bro. That's Swisher, and he has an infectious attitude. Everybody's kind of catching on, and the news today, my man Carlos Baerga just got inducted into the Indians Hall of Fame, and
the ceremony's in when, June?
Yes. They announced that he will be inducted into the Indians Hall of Fame, the Indians Alumni Hall of Fame, and he was a similar spark plug. He had an infectious attitude on that team in the 90s, so, you know, the transition between Baerga now to Swisher is kind of interesting, and how Swisher's signing has really reinvigorated everybody who's a Tribe fan and the whole team, along with Terry Francona.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, condolences to Nick Swisher on the loss of his mother to leukemia. It's heartbreaking as, you know, somebody who's going through their mother, you know, having breast cancer. The amazing thing for him to keep his emotions in check and, you know, be able to have baseball to grab onto is unbelievable. So it's really impressive how he's been able to keep that spirit up and bring up the spirit of the team. And they said that when he came back from his mother's funeral, they noticed that change in the team upon his return, you know, that he just brought it then.
Yeah, so he brings the energy, enthusiasm, excitement. He brings that every day. And hopefully, during the regular season, he'll do the same.
Kind of like Anthony to the show.
Well, maybe.
Maybe. Not to the sales pitches, though. I was actually going to bring that up about Baerga being inducted, but also news out today from Baerga is that Albert Bell will be making an appearance again at spring training.
Really?
Boom, boom, boom. He's
getting back involved.
He's things are good.
Little by little.
Has anybody noticed that he looks like Uncle Phil from Fresh Prince? If you look at his current pictures, dead serious.
Yeah, he does. Now that you say that.
Actually, it's kind of funny because I do business with somebody down in Arizona that lives in the same neighborhood as Albert Bell, and they go to the same pool for swimming lessons for their kids,
And he says it's funny. He's just Bell. It is not the guy that you remember from baseball. The guy was from the guy lived in Cleveland during those years and now is down in Arizona, owns a business down there.
He's not the one bringing his bicep up and pointing to
he's
it.
He's not
while
that.
At the pool.
He's Mr. Mom at the pool with his kids.
Huh. Those are actually his words too.
Yeah,
he calls himself Mr. Mom.
Yeah, it's hysterical. So it's great to have Albert Bell back in the fold. You know, when he left, that was a big part of Cleveland leaving. With him, it was not on par of LeBron James leaving, but it was the start of the big player leaving Cleveland. That was the first time I can remember. You know, Rocky Colavito, I wasn't around
but
for
that
you guys.
You got traded.
That was a trade.
Yeah.
You know, but that was the first one that I remember. Like, oh man.
Yeah, that was it.
From what my father told me, you know, it's like one of those things where Bell at the time was young and cocky, and you know he looks back on it and I think he regrets it because he knows. If he was on that 97 roster,
oh my god,
we would have won.
We would have won.
Yeah,
you know, and he knows it, and you know he's putting it on himself. You know, he knows it.
And you got to have that dominant hitter that people fear in the lineup.
Man, well, it's
not even the bat though. It's the body behind the play too. Oh. You know, it's just or the body in the box. You know, he
was a beast. He was just awesome. He was the best besides Manny Ramirez. Those two. I can't really pick between them, but those two, if I had to choose one guy to watch hit, it would be either Albert Bell or Manny Ramirez in their prime.
Manny had the sweetest swing that there was. I think in history of baseball, Roberto Clemente and Manny Ramirez had the best swings to watch.
Griffey, too.
Griffey has a beautiful swing. You're right. But if you're looking for the guy that you're going to watch go up, he's going to put an exclamation point on the game. It was Albert Bell because you had that feeling as he walked up to the bat in the ninth inning mm-hmm. and tribes down a run or two, and there's players on base. If he's going up there, it's almost like he's telling the pitcher when he walks up, hey, I'm just going to hit this out.
I'm going to win this game.
Yeah, it's you have no
there's
chance.
Nothing you could do about it.
Yeah.
He kept detailed reports on every at-bat that he ever had, every pitcher he ever mm-hmm. faced. Did you know that?
Oh, yeah.
He studied hardcore video, films, everything, and he kept all his reports. And just making so he had it all. In the back of his mind, what was going to happen in each pitch or in each at bat. He knew, like, if they were going to throw inside, outside, whatever. They played mind games. He knew everything about every pitcher.
Oh, he was just so much fun to watch. And the day he left, it was just, that was brutal. I shouldn't say, and I should go back, you know, the day the Browns left, I think, was the first time where Cleveland felt it, but Bell was kind of that kick in the,
kick in the
Cole Jones of him leaving. And
did
then,
you say Cole Jones?
The Colions. Colions is Italian.
Colions.
For the marbles. You know, so.
You have no Colions.
You know, so. You know, but, you know, and we were going to talk about Winter Haven versus Goodyear now. Nick, you've been down, I believe, to both.
Yeah, I have a little experience with both. Winter Haven, you know, is the old school major league type feel, you know, the movie. Everything was a little bit run down, but it was vintage baseball. And so it had that.
Florida.
Exactly. It was a miniature size municipal park.
Municipal stadium.
And it was very cool because I went there for the first time in 2008. That was the first year I started doing the graphic design for the Indians. And so we, as a thank you, because I kind of started midstream and we did a good job getting everything done. For opening day, they sent us down to Winter Haven. And, man, I was like a kid in the candy store. I was just so excited to just be witnessing Tribe spring training. I had never gone. I always wanted to do it. It was one of those things on the bucket list. It's not that big of a deal, but to me it was. It was really awesome. And the ballpark, like I said, is old, vintage, kind of run down. You know, the paint was kind of peeling off. But, you know, it said Cleveland Indians baseball to me, and it said, you know, old-time baseball. I know that they had to upgrade and move to Winter Haven, to Goodyear, but Winter Haven will always have a special place. I think, definitely in my heart, but in the hearts of the players and everybody that went there, even though the facilities, like probably the locker room and things like that, were definitely not up to par, especially with some other newer stadiums, but, you know, there's something to be said for the old school. And a story about Winter Haven real quick. So the first time I ever met Bob Feller was at Winter Haven. When he passed away, I posted the picture of me getting an autograph from him when I was in Winter Haven 2008. And I was very excited when I, well, as excited as you could be, when Bob Feller passed away, I was the one that was asked to create the patch design that the Indians wore on their jerseys.
That's awesome.
For that season. So, you know, that was the highlight of my career so far. My grandfather always taught me about Bob Feller. I was a pitcher in high school and Little League, and Bob Feller was somebody that I looked up to for all time. And when I was doing my logo for myself, coming out of college, I actually put a picture of Bob Feller on my inspiration board because, you know, that was something what I wanted to be, you know, the American dream, you know? So anyways, I'm meeting Bob Feller for the first time, and I have so many things I want to ask him. My grandfather's told me so many things about him. My grandfather had just passed away. So I get up to, the line was fairly long. I had him sign a shirt that I was wearing. I actually took the shirt off my back and had him sign it because I didn't have anything else for him to sign. And so I said, Bob, you know, you're one of my grandfather's favorites. He just recently passed away. Who was the toughest batter that you faced ever? And I was expecting him to say Joe DiMaggio or, you know, some big name, Ted Williams. And he said some guy, I don't even remember the guy's name, somebody from the Yankees. It was like a second baseman or a shortstop that wasn't a big name, but he was on those big hitting Yankees teams back in the day. And he said that guy just could never get him out. You know, he could never strike him out. He could strike out basically anybody, but this guy, he would just always get bat on the ball and put it in play and sometimes get a little line drive single. So that's what he said, and kind of surprised me. I started asking, what's your most memorable game? And he looked up at me, and he said, son, I don't have time to answer all these questions.
That sounds like Feller.
Go buy my book in the team shop there, and you'll know all the answers that you want. And I said, oh, I'm sorry, sir. Sorry, sir. So, you know, then we took a photo, and we were on our way. But that's just, you know, a fun story that the first meeting I ever had with Rapid Robert, first and only.
Then he asked you where his belt was.
Exactly. I think he was wearing suspenders that day. But then comparing that to Goodyear, Goodyear is just laid out, state of the art, kind of outside of the city. You know, Goodyear is close to Phoenix, about 30, 40 minutes away. And then it's close to Glendale, about 20 minutes away from there. And we stayed in Glendale. And the ballpark there is beautiful. You know, everything's state of the art, brand new. They got palm trees in the outfield, and you could sit on the outfield grass. There's a hill, so you could, you know, you don't even have to have a seat. You just go and sit on a picnic blanket or something like that out there. It's very cool scenery. The ballpark, the grounds are amazing. I'm sure the players appreciate the training facilities. We actually got to see one of the training facilities because I did some graphics in there. They were showing us around. And also, we were there in 2010 or 2009 and 2010. And in 2010, I believe, it was like the only time they had a rainstorm 2 days in a row in Arizona history, basically.
Wow.
No, it was pretty bad. Like, it was just pouring. And, you know, we're only there for a weekend. So we wanted to see a couple games. We ended up only getting to see one game and an inter-squad scrimmage. So it was pretty cool, though, because we got to see the behind-the-scenes stuff in the training facility. And I saw Feller there again, but I did not go up to get his autograph.
You again?
I was worried he would remember
Kid, did I tell you?
But Goodyear is very cool. I'm excited. I wish I was going this year. I'm always excited for spring training. The Warpath podcast is following the Goodyear Ballpark Twitter account. And they're posting photos from spring training. And I just got a chance to do the street pole banners this year for both the Indians and the Reds. So if any of you guys out there listening are in Goodyear and you happen to see those, let me know how they came out because I haven't seen them yet. And I also did the dugout roof for the Indians dugout in Goodyear. So
nice. Congrats.
Thanks, man. Yeah, it's a lot of fun stuff.
Now, have you ever been out there, Adam?
No. You know, the funny thing is, I travel to see the Indians every year. You know, next, being 2013, it's probably going to be Minnesota. Last year, I slept on a bus twice. I went to Boston and back for that Thursday game where we killed them. And then I went to St. Louis with my buddy. And the year before that was Yankee Stadium. And the year before that was
you know, Baltimore, and the year before that was Wrigley. I've been everywhere. You know, I've been, well, I can't say everywhere. I've been to a third of the stadiums, which is more than most people.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But what kills me is I've never been to spring training.
Got to go.
Same with if me. The Indians were still in Winter Haven during my college years, I probably would have went twice.
Yeah.
But to get all the way from Cleveland on a college budget, you know, it was just not going
to
happen.
It's pretty pricey to go out to Goodyear, take a flight out there. It's not too cheap. But
that's why, you know, as I said before, a lot of retired old men. You know, and all joking aside, you know, it's...
We should move out there.
Yeah, just do the show from out there.
Why not?
Now here's the question. You think we can get them to get us onto the team plane and fly out there?
We're going to do a show
can
on...
Can we pull any strings like that?
I doubt it. I doubt that.
I'll see if I can sell them on it.
Yeah, that might work.
But all joking aside, though, back to the parks, you know, it's just, I'll never get to go to Winter Haven. And, you know, maybe one day, you know, I'll go with my father and I'll go with my son, you know, and that could be 1,000 years from now, but... Because, A, I don't even have a kid, and B, you know, I just...
From the sounds of it, with the 10-year wait, yeah, girlfriend either, so...
The 10-year chase, yeah. So, but, I mean, all joking aside, though, I would love to one day just gallivant throughout, you know, Goodyear and just see some ball games.
Ah, it
beautiful
be
scenery,
fun.
Too, with all the mountains.
Isn't there airplanes in the outfield, too?
There is, yep. There's actually, like, I don't know if it's a hangar or just... an airport out there, but yeah, there's airplanes right outside the practice fields.
Well, the good thing Albert Bell doesn't play in his prime there; he'd be hitting some fighter jets,
definitely.
Well, we'll talk about Winter Haven versus Goodyear when Tom's able to get in here because we.
I think Tom is more expert on actual regular season ballparks, not necessarily spring training. I don't know.
So him and I can go toe to toe.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, he's been to 36 major league parks in his life, and. So he would be an expert on that. You and him, you guys should both go back and forth and talk about your experiences at the different parks.
We'll have trash talk on
that's gonna
ballparks be coming up. So we're going to just keep moving along here. All right, so what we want to talk about here, just to kind of wrap things up, you know, are what we know is going on at the ballpark right now, what Nick and I have been able to, you know, get out of the Indians. We've got some things that are happening that, you know, haven't been released yet to the public, but by the time that the podcast is released, will be released. The first thing you know is that, Nick, if you want to go ahead, Curtis Danberg from the Indians asked us to push.
Yeah, tickets on sale. Single game tickets go on sale
next Monday,
correct?
February 25th.
Yeah, so all you Tribe fans out there, make sure you go to Indians.com, purchase your tickets. I believe there's a link for Ticketmaster right on Indians.com. And, you know.
Buy them at the store, too, right?
You can buy them at the team shop. That's true.
Team shop, buy them online, and buy them wherever Indians tickets are sold.
Participating retailers.
Yes.
Also, we want to go over the promo schedule a little bit, see what you guys want to get excited for throughout the year. There's always some cool bobbleheads to talk about. And I know we've been talking about the man, the myth, the legend, Albert Bell, all podcast. And, you know, what do you know? He's going to have his own bobblehead by Medical Mutual on June 1st this year. So that's a good date to keep in your calendars.
Yeah, actually, if you're looking at getting tickets next week, that would be the date, you know, to look at getting the tickets ahead of time because those are going to go quick. I mean, those are going to fly off the shelves. I already know that... I'm going to be getting a ticket for that game, and I actually think that we're going to be out of town for a wedding, so I'm going to be buying a ticket and sending somebody to go get me my bobblehead.
Wait, you're going to a wedding too?
Yes.
Yeah, so am I. Where?
Columbus.
Oh, Pittsburgh. Oh,
damn. I think I'm going to one in Pittsburgh.
Don't get him talking about Pittsburgh. We don't want to hear about the...
There's a Tribe show. Let's continue.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, the other bobblehead that's going to be coming out is the Omar Vizquel bobblehead by KeyBank on July 8th. And I do know I will be out of town on vacation on that one.
Must be nice.
It's going to be it's going to be nice, but it's going to be a traveling summer with this. Yeah. At that time, he's going to be almost a year old.
I'm so busy having fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jeez. I'm not going to complain. Not going
to
complain
before
at all.
Before we get any further, let's go back to opening day. Because, you're going to have a magnet schedule on opening day designed by my good friend,
Ryan Ciriano or Chilignano, another Paisan.
Another Paisan.
See, the Paisans are designers and signage printers. That's all you need to know. And excellent setup men in the bullpen.
We've given up on plumbing and cement. So.
Or saving the princess from Bowser.
I do that in my free time. That's where I'm going on vacation.
Luigi.
To the Mushroom Kingdom.
Exactly. Anyways, Ryan Ciriano is a graphic designer at Contempo Communications. He does a great job for us. And he worked on the magnet schedule. And that is on opening day. Now, we're going to play the Yankees on opening day. April 8th is opening day.
The Evil Empire. We're talking about A New Hope. This is the Evil Empire.
So we play the Yankees on opening day. And you know, everybody knows as well as I know that whenever we play the Yankees, it's about half the stadium filled with Yankees fans.
Well, it's going to be a big storyline because, A, they see Swisher for the first time. We see Pronk back in Cleveland.
Exactly. Right?
Francona for his first against the Yankees, and it's opening day versus the Yankees.
We have to sell out with Tribe fans, at least for opening day. Come on, people.
Yeah.
We need to get out there. We cannot let New York Yankee fans come and overtake Progressive Field on opening day. That would just be heresy.
Oh, it would be just disgusting to see. You know, I hate it when I go down to the ballpark and see Yankee fan. I don't know if there is a fan or a Red Sox fan, and I apologize to my good friend Danny Prinzo, who's a Boston friend, but Yankee fan, Yankee player, Yankee management, everything about the Yankees. Yeah, you got some good history, but you are the evil empire. It's a good thing that Ichiro is there now because we hate Ichiro.
Exactly.
And we hate the Yankees. So we got to pack that ballpark, not just for opening day, but we got to pack it for the full series.
For the next three games after that, April 9, 10, and 11.
That's a four-game series.
It's a four-game series to start off the year at home. And then we play the White Sox right after that, three games going into the weekend, and then the Red Sox.
And in between the Sox, LeBron's back. The last Heat-Cavs game of the season.
Oh. Really?
Mm-hmm.
On the 15th?
There's a lot of hate going around Cleveland in the time period.
But it's not hate on us, though.
Not hate on us.
That's all that matters.
But I actually think it would be kind of fun for everybody with the Yankees coming into town. You know, as the Warpath podcast gets out there and keeps growing with more and more listeners, it'd be kind of fun to, you know, get your ideas, listeners, of chants that we can chant during the game against the Yankees that, we'll put it out there either in Twitter or on the podcast before the game. What inning and everything those chants should start.
I just got one thing to say. When I went to the Indians-Yankees game in June of 2011, and I bought somewhere in Times Square. I can't even tell you because there's literally 25 stores on one block that sells I Heart New York shirts. So I bought one, and I brought them back to Cleveland. Or I bought a few, brought them back to Cleveland, and I got them printed to say the original I Heart New York, but it says but dot dot dot, and on the back with an Indian script I hate the Yankees.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
That is outstanding.
Hey,
New York's a great city, but you know,
can't
say what I want to say on here, but yeah.
Yankee fan. Yeah.
Well, we got a couple other really cool promos to go over real quick. Indians wall calendar on April 9th, so that's day after opening day. That's another very nice design by my friend Ryan. You can follow him on Twitter, actually, too. I believe his Twitter handle is at WahooDog, DAWG82. I think he posts some different graphics up there every now and then. Good guy to follow. We have Sugardale Dollar Dog Nights. We got 15 of them throughout the year, so I'm not gonna go over those, but, hey, those are always a good time. Grab your Dollar Dog. Don't spend too much money at the ballpark. And speaking of that, there's some new information that is in the newest pocket schedule that I was just designing. That'll be coming out hopefully next week. New value concession pricing. Concession prices are dropping at Progressive Field. So we're going to do $4 domestic draft beers, $3 hot dogs every day, $2 soda refills. Ooh, refills only.
That's big.
And then 15 $1 dog nights. So They're adding dollar dogs. They're cutting, slashing prices. They're spending money to get the big names in the park.
Maybe it's a good thing that the old man lost his belt. You know, he's going to be eating a lot at the games now.
Yeah, you're not going to be able to buckle that, baby. But, you know, they're doing everything they can to get us back into the tribe. And we just want to give a shout out and a call to all you fans out there. Come support the team. Come support Anthony and I for the work that we do. And it's going to be a fun summer, I have a feeling. So everybody's going to want to be down at the ballpark.
Excitement's up. Prices are down. What a better reason to go. You know, it's wish the economy was like that. I wish the dollar was up, you know. And,
that's another podcast.
That's another different podcast. So, you know, lots of things to get out of the ballpark and find out. We're going to have more information. In a couple weeks we'll be able to give you a little bit more, but those are just a couple things happening. So now on to the, before we say goodbye and pimp out Mosier Media again, we wanted to talk about something that happened last week that I thought was absolutely hysterical. Nick texted both Adam and I about Trevor Bauer's rap song. Now I did see the headlines on Hardball Talk. One of NBC's websites said that Trevor Bauer says, "I'm terrible at rapping."
Well, you didn't need to tell us that.
Absolutely. I don't know. Was it the best or the worst white guy rap ever?
Oh, it's got to be the best worst. The best worst.
The best worst.
Not only white guy rap, it's just the best worst rap ever. It was pretty horrendously terrible. And for anybody who hasn't heard it yet, you just have to go check it out because it's worth a chuckle.
Oh, it's fantastic.
Sad part was he was serious.
He was, but, you know, did they ever say, was he talking about the catcher? Was he talking about the management?
Supposedly, it was. Some people say it was about the catcher's comments about him. And recently, he just got interviewed about it, and he said that it was about haters on Twitter, not necessarily.
That's a cover-up.
That catcher specifically.
Yeah, it's. I'm just reading the. It says Bauer, and not exactly the cleanest of flows, says things such as, "It's time to get back to all these fans that I've been losing, due in parts to the rumors moving about that I refuse to listen. So people get this vision of me. No one goes up hitting for me. I swear I've never been gifted nothing. Okay, I can't rap." And I swear to God, I'm not the one that made that one bad. That's the first time.
Hey, we better be careful what we say, because we might have a rap song written about us.
That's true.
Yeah.
You know what? If we had it written about us, though, that would just be an honor, I think.
Yeah. Listeners, if you want to write a rap song about us, Trevor Bauer, if you want to write a rap song about us, hey, you know, just after Joe's song comes up when he gets us a song here soon, we'll go ahead and we'll throw your rap
it'd be
in.
It'd be called Paisans. How do you say it?
What? Two Paisans at a Pollock?
Well, Paisans. Paisan Punks. That's what he.
Paisan Punks.
Paisan Punks is diss song.
And Cole
Young's.
Yeah, it's going to be a diss song for sure. That's his forte.
I like it. Well, you know, it was we were just laughing so hard when we saw it. And Trevor, we'll open up the mic to you. We've already sent out the tweets to you that you know, we need you on Warpath Podcast. You know, whether you're down in Columbus or you're coming up to Cleveland, you've got an open mic to explain things and to just break it down if you want it.
You know, I will say I think his reaction to the comments that the Diamondbacks catcher made was pretty epic.
Oh yeah.
They asked him what he thought about it, and he said, "I'm just proud that I live in the United States of America where we have freedom of speech." And he could say whatever he wants to say. And I just want to give a shout out to all those men and women in uniform overseas that are protecting our freedoms every day. You know, he made his little pedestal speech. And basically after that, he said, "I don't know about him, but I'm on the Cleveland Indians and I'm getting ready for 2013.
Yeah. Actually, one of the, in the song, I think the best line is, "This is tit for tat. Give me a break like Kit Kat."
I think that just says it all.
I don't know what to say after that.
I think that about wraps it up for us here at Warpath Podcast. Again, I want to thank you, Nick Pietrovoya, Adam Gutkowski. I'm Anthony LaGuardia.
Let's give out our Twitter handles. Why not?
Anthony LaGuardia at JoeFabeats. At JoeFabeats.
I love that one. Mine's Nick Pietrovoya at Tribe Designer on Twitter.
Adam Gutkowski at Foul Poles 11.
And don't forget, you can find Warpath Podcast at www.warpathpodcast.com or on Podomatic. You can also find our Twitter handle, Warpath Podcast. And
get in touch with the show if you have any ideas for shows, any ideas for topics, any great tribe memories you want us to talk about, anything you could think of. We're huge Indians fans, as you could tell. So anything you could possibly throw at us about the tribe, we'd love to listen.
Yeah, it helps us not ramble so much if you guys get in touch with us.
There's nothing to stop that.
Nothing to stop that. But again, thank you to Mosier Media for supplying the studios to us for all your videography needs. Call Mosier Media. Look them up. Adam, what's the website for Mosier Media?
I think it's videocleveland.com.
Videocleveland.com. So get in touch with them. And we'll be back hopefully in 2 weeks with another podcast for you. Thank you very much. This is Warpath Podcast, uploaded to the internet, downloaded into your hearts.
We're on the Warpath.
Go Tribe.